Welcome to the Communication and Relationships Summit, brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you the amazing international speaker, Ms. Rosemary Barnes. Rosemary, why don't you take it from here?
Thank you, Tanya. Such a pleasure to be involved with your summits. They are always so phenomenal. So thank you for doing this, Tanya. Communications and relationships. One of the biggest problems is, of course, learning to share the spotlight. We can't do what we do by ourselves, and trying to take credit for everything that we've managed to accomplish by ourselves is fairly short-sighted. But to begin, have you ever felt that although you were talking, the audience wasn't really listening? Are they disinterested? Are they distracted? Are they uncomfortable? How can you engage them? Perhaps one of the problems is that they're tired of hearing all about you. The essence of communication is speaking and listening. And that can only happen if the spotlight is being shared. Relationships are the core of good business and good business practices, and rely on give and take to create mutually beneficial processes and results, yes? This is not news, nor is it newsworthy, but it is vital. If you want to be heard, you must first learn to listen. If you want to be seen, you must first learn to see. And what's more, you must learn to listen and see with neutrality so that you can observe what is really there. It's easy to see and hear what we want to see and hear because we color everything with our own point of view. We send information through our own filters, not those of the ones doing the speaking. And then we wonder why we don't really get it, why we aren't seeing the points that they're making with the power that they're presenting them with. Consider that the most common complaint that we hear is no one listens. Young people, no one listens to me. Ever heard a parent's exasperation at their children when they say they just don't listen? For the energetic and enthusiastic business up-and-comers, the most difficult hurdle is getting heard by the right ears. The ears being the ones that truly listen for potential, for possibility. From the other side of the fence, have you ever witnessed perplexed leaders puzzling at why they aren't getting the buy-in from their teams? For the most part, the problem is that while the receiving ears are hearing what we are saying, they are interpreting that information through their own filters, which up until this point have served them very, very well. Convincing others to adopt a new point of view is as difficult to do as getting someone to change their entire value system, and that is probably the most difficult thing we could ever attempt. We cannot understand the complexities of that attempt until we've taken the opportunity to reconsider and possibly alter our own filters and values. And that is a massive undertaking. But that's the trick to it all, you see. Creating lasting relationships requires learning to see and hear, not from our own position and biases, but from theirs. This is not simple, and it's not easy. It takes a very self-aware person to have confidence enough to even momentarily put aside their own ideas and opinions to honestly and openly listen and wholeheartedly try to understand the other party's needs and strengths. Listening, even active listening, is not enough. The old adage of walk a mile in their shoes is the key to understanding, and understanding is essential for true communication. Anything less is only lip service. And that does more to undermine relationships than even condescension or aloofness. At least with those, both parties are clear about where they stand. The word of the day is solipsistic. It's derived from Sol, the sun, perceived in days long past as the center of the universe, and ipsis, a state of being, resulting in solipsistic. The resultant meaning of all of this is the belief that a person is the center of the universe, with all the other heavenly bodies orbiting around their beautiful little heads. Babies, for example, are born completely self-centered or solipsistic. When they're tired, hungry, wet, bored, so on, they don't care what their caregiver is doing. They don't care if the caregiver is exhausted, and they don't care about anything else about the caregiver. Babies want what they want, and they want it now. They have no language skills, so there's no way to tell them that they're being unreasonable, or that if they would only wait 5 minutes, the dilemma would be solved. Babies don't share the spotlight with anyone. A baby must be taught that they are not the only being in existence and that others have needs too. Some of us take longer to learn that lesson than others, and some learn it better than others. Is there anyone that doesn't know individuals that even as adults continue to live in their solipsistic bubbles? Since adults do have language skills to more and less degrees, depending on their situations, they may either be choosing not to use them or to not use them well, or they may simply not care enough to be bothered to try to understand the points of views of other people. Now, there is a great deal of validity and truth that if we don't see to our own needs first, we're not as well equipped to assist others. The case of the oxygen masks in airplanes is a case in point. But relationships are not grounded in emergency procedures. Relationships depend on caring and reciprocity, and then on clear communication. Let's talk for a moment about the law of reciprocity. The law of reciprocity says that when someone receives a gift they perceive to be of value, they immediately feel an urge to somehow, some way, sometime return the favor. If someone does something nice for you, consciously or subconsciously, you look for ways to do something nice in return. It works in reverse as well. If you do something nice for someone, you expect them to favor you in kind at some point in some way. If a leader makes an effort to make an individual feel special and valued, it's usually repaid with loyalty and an increased desire to prove the leader was right to hold that positive opinion. That's a repayment of the debt. Conversely, if an individual diligently applies himself or herself to completing an assignment or a task in record time and with extraordinary quality, and does not receive a commendation from the leader, they will feel affronted and resentful at the lack of what they feel to be rightfully owed attention. The law of reciprocity was not fulfilled, and the debt was not paid. The possibility of them continuing to go over and above the call of duty to fulfill a task is somewhat diminished after that. Project work is a perfect example. If two individuals are assigned a joint project and each believe they have contributed approximately equally, they expect equal compensation, and they have a right to do so. When kudos are handed out for a job well done, both individuals can reasonably expect equal time in the spotlight. If that doesn't happen, if one of the individuals takes sole credit or minimizes the contributions of the other, it will be considered a breach of trust, of respect, and hard feelings will always be the result. Now, a single episode might be forgiven, might even be overlooked, but a repeat performance of hogging the spotlight will demand a reevaluation of the relationship, where apologies may help to heal the wound, or if the breach of trust has been severe, the relationship may come to a harsh full stop. It is possible to stack the favor bank if the relationship is firmly established, but at some point the stack will topple and the relationship will suffer. Just a sidebar note here, today we have an additional complication with the law of reciprocity. The baby boomers and Generation X combined individuals born post-war to about 1980, these individuals are bound by this law, and it governs much of their personal and professional behavior. Generation Y, the millennials, 1980 to 2000-ish, and Generation Z, those individuals born after 2000, they don't live by this rule, and for the most part, are not even aware of their existence. To get more information on that, I'm inviting you to read the second book I wrote about confident leadership in 21st century business, Bridging the Generation Gaps. But that's a sidebar note. Because, though, that these younger generations do not experience the urge to reciprocate, or at least not at nearly the same levels of the previous generations, favor and kindness debts awarded to Generation Y and Z are rarely given a second thought by the recipients. When baby boomers and Generation X live, eat, and breathe reciprocity, I mean, for goodness sake, people used to keep track of how many times they went to their neighbors for dinner, and then they owe them that many dinners back. Keeping track of that thing was very, very real. They are attached to kindness and favors and sharing credit and the obligation to return those same. When they provide those services to others, including anyone of any generation, it's a law. But Generation Y and Z don't live by that rule. For the earlier generations, when no repayment arrives, they tend to experience a flood of negativity toward the recipient of their gift. And there is the start of the seeds of resentment and distrust and the dissolving of the relationship. On the other side of the equation, Generation Y and Z are not as uniformly bound by the need to reciprocate or that there's any obligation attached to kindness and favors or sharing credit. When those individuals provide services to others, including older generations, they don't expect to be repaid. They are more likely to accept the feel-good emotions that accompany their generosity to be payment enough. It's rare to find Generation Y and Z individuals doing something nice for someone because they want to stock up their own favor bank. They tend to perceive this whole system of owing a favor back to be completely inane, totally silly, and of no value. The law of reciprocity is simply not a value they accept in their lives. They do, however, readily accept that teamwork is the fastest road to success, and they are accustomed to working in groups to achieve desired outcomes. This is very, very different from their predecessors, who took great pride in being able to accomplish things on their own. For baby boomers in Generation X, sharing the spotlight in business was much more difficult to do than it is for our younger generations. Very, very recently, I listened to The Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, wherein he talks about the notion of being a self-made success. In the book, he details the difficulties of the past within Korean Airlines, where airplane crashes and safety concerns actually had a number of countries disallowing them into their airspace. More accidents happened within that airline than any other in the world, even though pilots went through rigorous training programs and the aircraft were in excellent condition. It turns out it was a communication problem caused by societal expectations. In Korea at that time, and even today, respect, especially for higher-ranking officers, demanded that captain's orders be obeyed and not questioned. In this airline, even if the captain was exhausted by too many hours in the cockpit, second officers and other crew did not question actions, even if they thought them to be an error. Surely their superior knew better than they, else they would not be sitting in the left seat, and to have suggested an error in judgment would have been an insult in the highest order. In North America, on the other hand, while the chain of command is equally required, co-pilots are expected to do more than simply obey. And when the lives of hundreds of passengers are in their care, pilots and crew are expected to work as a team to ensure the safety of everyone. That means communicating not only respectfully, but clearly, effectively, efficiently, to make sure safety is of paramount importance. Consider the more recent case of Captain Sully gliding his passenger jet to safely land in the Hudson River after both engines ceased to function. He was in the control seat and his commands needed to be heard, but it was a team effort to save the lives of 155 passengers and crew. Captain Sully did not take full credit for the landing, but instead he shared the spotlight with every single crew member on that flight, even though he was in charge. The result? He earned the respect of the crew, the airline, the media, and the world. And why did he do it? Because no man is an island, especially on the Hudson River, and he is an excellent leader that genuinely cares about those he works with. Had he taken all the credit, he would have risked his relationships with all of them. It's easy to share the spotlight when you value the contributions of the team. Most of us do. But perhaps we haven't fully realized it, or perhaps we haven't taken the time to express it. Sharing the spotlight doesn't demean our contributions or tamper with control over our teams or over the situations. Sharing the spotlight simply means giving credit where credit is due and communicating appreciation or gratitude in a significant or meaningful way. It means developing and nurturing an attitude of gratitude. Thanks to Colin Sprake for coining that phrase, and for the contributions of others, and then making an effort to share that sincere appreciation. It doesn't matter whether you are a child or a grandparent or an up-and-comer or a seasoned business leader. The core of communication is more about listening than talking, and listening to really understand what's being said in the way that it was meant to be heard. Listening is the core to every communication. Even solipsistic babies learn to listen before they begin to speak. The secret sauce, though, is to listen by making a solid effort.
You should be hearing it. Can you plug it in?
Plugged in. Check this.
Oh, I seem to be being interrupted here. I'm going to continue.
Oh, now it's working.
Okay.
Shit.
May I continue?
Uh, I don't know if these headphones are bad.